you live, cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Really happy to be back with you. I'm glad to be alive and kicking. And I'm really happy that you're joining us and listening in again tonight. A really interesting show on Monday. Hopefully everyone was tuning in. We had a person that was there, a witness, at the Dallas shooting. And so if you didn't catch our show on Monday, make sure you go back and listen to it, because very interesting perspective from the ground there in Dallas. You can catch us on YouTube. If you ever miss our show or don't catch it live, you can catch us on YouTube at UCY.TV. And, you know, catch all of our show archives, because we're talking about topics that last for weeks and months and even years. Like, for instance, the Bernie Sanders topic, which we're going to talk about first. I mean, we've been on this for like over a year now. So it's kind of, you know, good to stay up to date with all the stuff we're talking about. Because, you know, the situation that we're dealing with right now with Bernie Sanders, we've been kind of predicting something similar to happen for a long time now. And so if you were listening, you'd maybe not as, you know, it may not have, sorry, I can't get spit the words out. It may not have hit you as such a surprise, what went down with the endorsement and all that stuff. But without making a... Everybody wait forever. Let me introduce my panel here. First, I've got my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Not much, Nick. Do you hear me okay?
Yep, you're coming through loud and clear.
Cool, man. I was just going to say, with the Bernie Sanders thing, you know, I was disheartened yesterday, but then reading into the long game and the strategic part of it and how FDR actually endorsed Al Smith and then went on to the convention, contested him, and beat him, because the delegates all jumped ship when they realized that Al Smith could never hope to be the actual winner in an open election. It could be possible that happens again. I don't know. I mean, in the next 10 days or so, some dirt could come out. You never know. Hillary's character could be assassinated at any time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very optimistic. I mean, it's a long shot. I'll say that. I guess it is possible, but I don't think it'll happen.
Or he angles for a VP.
Yeah.
That could probably more likely happen, and then something could happen to her too again.
That could be the case. I mean, Bernie Sanders as a vice president, that would actually be a winning ticket. I think that would be Trump. On the other hand, if Clinton goes with a safer VP, I mean, the latest poll that I saw was that showed that Sanders was surging in some of these swing states in Florida and Pennsylvania. I mean, you could definitely see him taking the Rust Belt, Ohio, and places like that. You know, you never know what could happen there. That being said, let me introduce the rest of our panel here tonight. Sorry, I'm off to like a, I can't spit the words out today. I don't know what's wrong with me. We're also joined tonight by Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Not a whole lot. Just a little surprised that people are surprised that he endorsed her. I don't think that was ever not part of the plan. He was always going to endorse her. He's not a revolutionary. People make the forget the distinction between a political revolution and an actual revolution. He's not calling for an open insurrection, and to a fault, I mean, maybe. But I never expected him to not endorse Hillary Clinton.
Well, he kind of said that. He said that from the beginning, though, didn't he? He said he was going to endorse Clinton from the beginning.
Yeah, he did. He said he would support whoever was nominated. And I read some exchange. Someone who was at one of the meetings where they were debating the platform. And apparently, I mean, according to this person, they weren't going, the DNC, I mean, this is complete hearsay, but it's a source of a source. They said that the DNC basically weren't going to integrate any of those progressive platforms at all. And that the only way that they would do it is for Bernie Sanders to endorse her. So like I can't even imagine what that platform would have looked like. I mean, it probably might as well have been a GOP talking points at that
point. I heard that a lot of the Democratic platform is basically they adopted a lot of the Republicans' platform. I heard that they were to the right on the Palestinian issue and other issues.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people make a big fuss about the platform, but, you know, it's important to understand that the party platform, it's not a binding agreement. The person who's eventually elected or the people who are elected, they're not bound to these platforms, you know, and as pretty much evidenced with Obama, I'm sure he wound up with a pretty progressive platform as well when he got elected, and I don't really think that he followed through on much of that platform, if any of it.
Platform is completely meaningless. Once they get in there, they write the script of, you know, what countries they're going to invade and what resources they need, and none of the election stuff matters.
Yeah, I think the platform, it's the platform is kind of like, so, you know, they have the first layer, which is like the primary system, where that's in place to placate the public, where it's like, oh, you have your say, you know, you get to pick your choice, and here's your two choices. And so you can't complain when, you know, when one of these people get elected because you voted for them. The platform is like the next level up for like the delegates and all the really hardcore like people from the party that really take it seriously, you know, the delegates and the superdelegates and the party officials. The platform is like for them to feel like they also have their voices heard as well, you know, and so they get to say, oh, well, we want to fight for this and we want to fight for that, you know, and our party should fight for this, our party should fight for that. And the politicians are, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. We'll do that when we get in there. And then, as we all know, once these assholes get elected, everything goes out the window, and they basically do whatever the hell the money tells them to do, the special interest, the bank, the people that bankroll, you know, the oligarchy tells them what to do. They do that. You know, they don't do what the platform tells them to do. The platform isn't binding. They don't have any legal, there's no legal repercussions if they don't follow the platform. So I think a lot of people that make a huge deal about the platform as far as regarding Bernie Sanders, it's good intentions, but unfortunately it's not, I wouldn't hold my nose and vote for Hillary Clinton because Bernie Sanders is getting a little bit of sway in the platform that just is not going to do anything when it comes down to the policies that are going to be enacted by Hillary Clinton and all these people that are going to be reelected in Congress. So, you know, I just don't really think that's a it's kind of a moot point, I guess you could say. And the other thing is that also in the platform fight, I remember in 2012, the Democratic delegates were trying to, like, pass some kind of amendment to the platform about, what was it? Something about condemning Israel for their treatment of Palestinians. And the delegates had like a majority there, and the person who was like the, what do they call this? The speaker of the platform. I don't know what they call it. The person who's like presiding over the committee and the conference and all that stuff. That person just ignored the will of the delegates anyway, you know. And so I don't know. There was a lot of commotion regarding the $15 an hour minimum wage that was put into the Democratic platform. But that's, I mean, let's be real. That's probably not going to happen.
It's still not even keeping up with 72, which is what they're basing it off, where they said minimum wage would be today like $22.60 an hour or something like that.
Yeah, adjusted for like real inflation, the minimum wage, which was back, you know, when they, back when we still had a monetary system that wasn't completely based on fiat currency, and inflation, real inflation, hadn't run out of control. I mean, minimum wage at one point was like 25 cents, but that same quarter then is worth like over 20 bucks now. Like minimum wage, if it had kept up with inflation, should be over 20 bucks. You know, 15 bucks is not a livable wage. It's not. And
back when they were silver notes and you could go to a bank and get silver coins for your dollars.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. I mean, the quarters back then were made out of silver, you know, and those same quarters now are worth like 20 bucks. So I've heard a lot of people make that argument, but on the other hand, I've seen a lot of people making other arguments. And, for that, I want to bring Claire into the conversation. Claire, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Surviving out here. So you sent me a link earlier today, and I'm not sure if you're going to be writing a story on it or not, but following Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Clinton, it looks like Jill Stein is now getting a huge influx in interest, and not only interest, but it looks like her fundraising has grown almost 1,000% since Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton. So this I found pretty interesting, and for those that aren't aware, Jill Stein is the Green Party presidential candidate, and only a couple of days before Sanders made his endorsement of Clinton, she actually offered him to run in the Green Party and to take over the ticket under certain stipulations. That, I thought that was very interesting. Claire, you actually wrote an article on that. What do you make of this newfound interest in Jill Stein?
Well, it makes perfect sense, because Hillary is a totally kind of, I mean, I would have to say repulsive candidate. She might as well be Dick Cheney, as far as I can tell. And I guess Trump is an option for some people, but really, if people want to hold to the principles that Sanders was saying that he wanted to uphold, then actually Stein makes a lot of sense. You know, she's anti-war for real. She has a lot of the same principles that Sanders claimed that he had. So she, you know, if I was voting type, she would make for a viable alternative. It makes sense that people who are, you know, repulsed by Hillary and who really can't stand Trump would look for alternatives that are actually viable, you know, principled candidates. And I think that she kind of fits the bill. So it makes sense that she's receiving so many donations and so much interest now.
So I have a couple of interesting numbers here. I'm pulling this from US Uncut, which is a news outlet that was pretty heavily in the pocket for Bernie Sanders, but now it seems like they're not following along with Sanders' endorsement, and they may be shifting their allegiances over to Jill Stein, which in my opinion is obviously a good thing. So according to them, Stein's social media accounts have also seen a tremendous growth in engagement in the past 24 hours. A recent live stream posted to the Stein campaign's Facebook page has been viewed over 300,000 times in less than a day. Her page itself has added approximately 44,000 new likes in the past week. Her Twitter account has gained 145,000 new followers, and it's increasing by the tens of thousands each week. And there's been 10,000 new signups for her email list since yesterday. So this is pretty big. I mean, it looks like there's a large percentage of the Bernie people that are not going to be following the flock and just voting for Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, this is making, you know, turning into a very interesting election here as far as, you know, these numbers go. Because, you know, there's going to be some other shady thing. You thought the primary was shady. I mean, there's going to be some very shady stuff going on in the general. But I saw some recent polling that showed Gary Johnson is up to about 10% in a nationwide polling, and Jill Stein's already at 5%. These polls came in
catching up to giant meteor, right?
Yeah, they're almost catching up to the giant meteor. If you combine the two, they're actually above it. But these polls came out were conducted before you know, whilst Bernie Sanders was still in the race. So I wouldn't be surprised if Jill Stein's support went up another 5%, and she was at 10%, and Johnson was at 10%, and then you know, Trump falls to 30, and Hillary falls to 30. I mean, you know, and then you still have several people that are undecided and that kind of thing. So this is going to be very interesting. I think this is could be the first time in a long time that we'll see a legitimate challenge from not only one but two different third parties.
From Meteor Nuts, that's the ticket.
Yeah, you got to get the Meteor Nuts ticket. and now imagine this: imagine if the Green and the Independent and the Libertarians actually joined forces after, you know, later on in this election cycle, and they work together. Imagine that. I mean, that could be something that could really challenge the Republicans and Democrats. I mean, this is just something that, you know, speculation and what if, but what if? That'd be pretty cool, I think.
Well, you know, part of the problem, part of the issue for some people is that libertarians have issue with Johnson being the candidate. He came out in favor of TPP and some other things that didn't really fit typical party lines. So even there's controversy, too.
Yeah, there's definitely dissent within the libertarians' own ranks. But I think, you know, they'll get past that stuff. And, you know, Johnson's not a perfect candidate by any means, but... I mean, let's face it. He's really good on a lot of things, just like Jill Stein is. They're both pretty much in similar agreement on foreign policy, which, in my opinion, everyone knows is the single largest issue. And they're also in agreement on the drug war policy. So those two issues are very huge, and those also play into what's going on right now with police brutality and. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff, like the drug war plays very heavily into that. These two candidates agree on that issue. And, you know, in my opinion, those are the two of the biggest issues. So there could be some room for collaboration. I guess you never know. Jake, I know we've talked about this before. And in fact, I think we've talked about how Ralph Nader was actually also calling for this kind of alliance to kind of challenge the status quo as well.
Yeah. He wants the left and right anti-establishment groups to unite. And interestingly, Nader actually applauded Sanders' endorsement, but for a different reason, because of the way he did it. He made her repeat, or he made her go through the platform. And so basically, Nader thinks that Bernie Sanders set Hillary Clinton up to betray herself, and what, you know, if she breaks her word, then all those people who would reluctantly come on board to begin with will then completely turn their back on her. But whatever. Ralph Nader looks like a man who has a lot to say but can't say it. Actually, no, he does say it. He's just boring as hell when he does say it.
Oh, man. So I wrote an article yesterday called Dear Bernie Sanders Supporters, Don't Kill Your Revolution by Voting for Hillary Clinton. And I stand by that article, and I'm glad that it got a lot of views, and it got like 13, 14, 15,000 shares. Okay, 15,000. It went up since last time I checked. But I talk about both of these candidates, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, and how they're a viable alternative to voting for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Because at this point, I mean, you know, we're basically dealing with the two most hated candidates almost ever. You'd have to go back a couple decades worth of polling to find two candidates that were this unpopular before they were even elected. And so this is a real opening here, and people should see this, and as messed up and maybe as counterintuitive as this sounds, having Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as the two mainstream candidates is actually somewhat of a positive thing when it comes to people looking for something else, looking for a different alternative, you know, looking to the third parties or looking towards ideologies like anarchism. Or in my article, I make a big reference to agorism. So I'm just going to read one paragraph from my article. And if you want to read the rest, you can go ahead and do that. There's also a video included that kind of is related. But this is for the people who have kind of – this is their first go at the political system. They've realized that they've been betrayed, maybe not so much by Bernie Sanders himself, but by the system, you know, by the system that is kind of creating these situations. There is an alternative option here, and I don't want to discredit local politics. I think that if you want to participate in politics, I think locally is the most effective thing you could do, because as Jake has written pretty extensively about in an amazing article, was about basically how, you know, even if Bernie Sanders was elected, he would become a product of this federal government system. And it would be a letdown. It would be very similar to what happened with Obama. And, you know, Obama came into power in 2008 under kind of similar circumstances. He had a very progressive groundswell of support. And, you know, he was running against he wasn't running against Bush, but he was running against the Bush doctrine and Bush policies and stuff. And he was running against McCain, which basically was just an embodiment of the Bush doctrine. And Obama was elected under pretty similar circumstances to you know, the revolution that was supporting Bernie Sanders. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, Obama kind of went back on all of his promises. He didn't do a lot of the things, if not most of the things he said he was going to do. He was going to end the war in Iraq. He was going to end the war in Afghanistan. I mean, he briefly pulled the troops out of Iraq, but he quickly put them back in. He never ended the war in Afghanistan. In fact, there was just an announcement the other day that, you know, we're going to be in Afghanistan until 2020. I mean, this is now not only the longest war in U.S. history. I mean, by the time it's over, it's going to be like twice as long as any war that we've ever fought in the United States. And so Obama really ran against that war, and he really failed to do anything about ending it. But, you know, for the people that get discouraged by federal politics, I don't blame you. I'm actually one of those people, and I'm sure a few people on the call tonight are also in that same group. But a couple of things you can do to kind of go after the things that you – the reason why I think people were voting for Sanders is because they understand there's something wrong in the United States. Like, a lot of people that voted for Sanders are young people that have gone to college, and they get out of college, they have a bunch of debt, they can't find a good job. And so, you know, the economy sucks, and people are wondering what the hell's going on. There's all these police killings and all this crap is messed up. We've got an empire that spans all across the globe and nobody's doing anything about it. So, you know, plenty of reasons for people to be kind of upset at the political system, and now to be frustrated with it because it just really doesn't work, even when you try to participate in it. A few things you can do. Creating independent news organization, that's the first thing I put in there in my article, because that's exactly what I did in 2012 when I went through the same exact process, because I used to be a Ron Paul supporter, and he was kind of similar to Bernie Sanders in many respects, a little bit coming from more of a libertarian side of things, but, you know, similar nonetheless. And I saw how the media treated Ron Paul, just saw the same way the media treated Bernie Sanders, and that's why I started up the anti-media. But something that I can definitely say here, and I'll say right now, it actually worked, because one of the websites I referenced earlier, US Uncut, I mean, those guys are a pretty new independent news outlet, and I can tell you something, like, they really helped Bernie Sanders. They really helped counter the narrative coming from the Clinton-aligned media. They really helped build his support. So creating independent news outlets out of reaction to the way Bernie Sanders was treated, that is something that can be really effective in the next election cycle, or, you know, just moving forward, and it can be effective from day one, I think. The second thing, building community gardens, holding teach-ins to teach people new skills instead of going and racking up a bunch of college debt. I mean, there's different way, peer-to-peer education and things like that. organizing community energy co-ops. This is something that me and DB have been talking about on the show for a long time. You know, green energy is amazing, but also the other thing about green energy is you have to remember decentralization is the key to it, because if we shift to green energy and still allow like five companies to supply all of the green energy, all of the solar energy, well, we're still dealing with the same exact problem. We're dealing with dependence, we're dealing with energy monopolies and things like that. Like, what's the difference between relying on oil or gas coming from five different companies to depending on solar energy coming from five different companies? So it's really important. One of the tenets here that I put in this article, community energy co-ops, it's important to either generate energy locally, whether it's like right on your own house, or try to get it done in your community so that you guys have control of your own energy. Community kitchens and food banks so that you can help alleviate the homeless problem, the hunger problem, the poverty problem. The poverty issue can also tie back in with, you know, teach-ins and peer-to-peer education, community education centers, things like that. Community defense groups. Now, this is something that is more of a libertarian idea, but I think people who are concerned with police brutality should look into this. This is something that was pioneered by the Black Panthers a long time ago, but this is something that can be really effective. And, you know, if a community can get its own community defense groups that they can hold accountable and that actually know the community and are people that are trusted within the community, they will not, first of all, they won't be as distrusted as the cops, and second of all, they're going to be a lot less likely to be killing people on the street because they can actually be held accountable. One of the things, the biggest problem with police is that it's almost impossible to hold these guys accountable. A security guard, if you're at a nightclub or something and there's a fight out front, and if a security guard pulls out his gun and shoots somebody, well, guess what? That guy's going to be, you know, he's going to be held accountable. If it was a cop,
he's going to get hired by the local PD.
Yeah, there you go. If it was a cop, I mean, there'd be no accountability. If it's a security guard, it's the opposite thing. So that's what I'm talking about with community defense groups, is that you know, make like community-funded security groups from people that are within the community, that know the community, that are trusted by the community, and they can patrol the neighborhoods and keep them safe. And then that will alleviate the need for cops. And eventually you can just tell the cops that, hey, we don't want you even coming in our neighborhoods anymore unless we call you. And so, you know, that's one way that we could address this issue of police brutality. Forming employee-owned businesses is another great way. I mean, that's a way that you could practice the essence of socialism, which is the worker-owned means of production. I mean, that basically, you know...
Nick, can we go back to that community defense group? Because the powers that be have already started to see the writing on the wall, and they're already telling gun shops in the greater Detroit area not to sell to New Era anymore. I mean, firearms, saying if these guys come in wearing any of that stuff, don't sell it to them. I mean, they're going to try to shut that kind of stuff down. They don't want to deal with militias. They want to be able to come in, go door to door, confiscate what they want, send who they don't want, you know, around to camps, shit like that, man. They're getting ready for all that crap.
Yeah, you're right. And it's kind of an expected it's kind of an expected blowback when agorists take it upon themselves to start undermining the need for, you know, government institutions, which are largely corrupt and violent, as we all know. The government tries to crack down on those institutions. Like, for instance, the security group that you're talking about in Detroit, which is a private security group that helps patrol the neighborhoods and helps reduce the need for cops and is much more effective, much less violent, much more accountable. The state will try to crack down on that stuff at first, but, you know, that stuff is expected, and the crackdown only builds more popular support for these kind of groups and institutions. And it's just a battle. It's a battle, tit for tat. And, you know, sooner or later, you know, the one that is better will prevail. And, you know, in my opinion, it'll be the community oriented stuff. It will eventually prevail. But there's going to be, you know, the government, the state is going to try to crack down on that stuff. So back to these employee owned businesses, and, you know, this can be done with pretty much a lot of the things that I'm talking about here, because this really is the essence of socialism, albeit at like from a free market standpoint. Because socialism really isn't voting for politicians that are going to create a welfare state. That really isn't what socialism is. That's what it's been kind of, the term has been co-opted, just like the term capitalism has been co-opted. And, you know, let's not even go into the semantics there. But employee-owned businesses are very efficient. They've actually been shown to be more profitable. The employees have a say in the management of the business, and it's the shared prosperity, I guess you can call it. That's one another thing that people can do. And then even supporting local businesses that are already there. I mean, that's just these are things that I'm putting out there where you can make a big difference in your community without throwing a vote. You don't have to cast a vote for anybody. You can start doing these things tomorrow. And these little things within your own community, or for instance, starting a news organization, these are going to have a bigger impact from your, you know, the things that you could do personally. They will have a bigger impact on the world and the country and your community than by casting a vote for some candidate. I guarantee you. But again, I'm not saying just forget the idea of voting. You know, I'm not saying that completely. But you know, these options, in my opinion, are more effective than voting. But you know, as I mentioned, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, these are viable candidates that should be given a look. I linked to their platforms in the article, so you can go right to them and see what they're actually saying. You don't have to depend on some propagandist to tell you, oh, they believe in this and they believe in that. Oh my God, the libertarians, they're gonna kill grandma, and the Green Party is gonna do this and that. No, go to their platform and see what they're saying. Follow them on social media and see what they have to say. Don't believe these propagandists. Because everybody in the mainstream media is going, especially as these parties start gaining more popularity, especially I think it with the Green Party, because right now the Libertarian Party is kind of being leaned on to help make Trump lose. So the media, I've noticed, they're kind of letting the Libertarian Party have its kind of have its day in the spotlight for a little bit, because I think they're counting on Jill Stein not getting enough support to make Hillary lose. So they're going to try to make Hillary win by supporting the libertarians by making Trump. I mean, it's complicated, but I definitely see that trend emerging. But I think if Jill Stein starts becoming popular, there's going to be a major media offensive against her. So you know, keep an eye on that. Don't believe the propaganda. Do your own research on Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. But yeah, anyway, moving on. We've also got another guest on the line tonight. We've got Manny Aguilar on the line. What's up, Manny?
Man, I thought you were going to wait for the last 2 minutes or something again.
Nah, I'm going to give you more than 2 minutes tonight. But, hey, we can barely hear you, though.
Okay, well, I just want to basically go back to Monday. Because, you know, like for to see about Black Lives Matter and what's happening in the neighborhood, from a journalist point of view, that's one thing. From an activist point of view, like myself, it's a different thing because I'm everywhere. I'm not, when I'm reporting, I'm fucking right there. You know, I'm not just some damn office writing a fucking article. You know what I'm saying? So the bottom line is this, you know, is that the Latino community is being hit, without a doubt, harder than the Black community. The reason you don't hear, and I'm very clear about that, no bias here, very clear, is that because a lot of Latinos are undocumented, sometimes they're afraid of reporting all the shit that goes on in their neighborhood. That's the problem right there, but there's no doubt about it and stuff like that. Now, the guest from Dallas, that's great and dandy, she's a guest from Dallas, we're happy down there. But we have our own problems with Black Lives Matter here in Los Angeles. I mean, Los Angeles, we're being hit hard. And I mean hard, you know what I mean? I don't know what's going on down there in San Diego, you know, but I mean, L.A., I mean, it's just completely where they're, I mean, that's why we're blocking, you know, freeways down here and stuff like that. We make it happen because that's the most effective way for us to get attention, is blocking those freeways and stuff like that. And it has been part of the civil rights movement in, you know, has a big meaning, you know, when it comes to, you know, protests against police brutality and stuff like that. And we need to start talking more about what our people are basically suffering in the border with Border Patrol. Border Patrol is the agency that's more out of control, and I hardly ever hear about it, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. So that's why, you know, we better go to 2 hours as soon as possible. Let's put it that way, you know, because Border Patrol, we need to be talking about this stuff and all that. And, you know, politics is fine and dandy, but at the same time, you know, the president of the United States is already over there, you know, Rothschild. His last name is Rothschild, you know, and they own the Fed. So they're the president of the United States. Don't worry about anybody else getting elected, you know. And so we want to basically encourage people also to look into the deported veterans, because a lot of these people are dying on the waiting list of the VA. It's really a tragedy when I see a veteran that has died. 6 of them were on the waiting list, and they died already. So, I mean, you cannot have a veteran waiting for, you know, for 1 year, you know, for help and stuff like that, because it's not just going to happen. We have a veteran that's deported that actually came to, you know, help us in support, and he was walking with, you know, with crushes and stuff like that. And so we got some people in bad shape, and PTSD is a big thing, as you know, Nick, and stuff like that. And so that's what, you know, that's been a big story. That's an update. They're still reviewing their cases as of today, and so we'll have more information hopefully next week and stuff like that, and hopefully a couple of them will be admitted to the United States. I mean, their cases look really good and stuff like that, you know. And so I'll probably be checking up on them next week when I'm down there, this week when I'm down there. So I'll be down there in San Diego supporting our Rainbow Brothers and Sisters for the big march on, you know, on the parade down the hillcliffs and stuff like that. So that's what's going on in the real world and stuff like that. And I just, it's just, you know, really upsetting when cops, you know, basically start getting scared because the cops getting shot and stuff like that. And all of a sudden everybody, they want sympathy. Oh, the cops got shot and stuff like that. What about the fucking people that getting shot left and right? Mexicans and blacks, you know what I mean? What about them? You know, nobody cried over them. But now that it happens to them, now they're crying about it and stuff like that. You know, it has to be across the board in fairness and stuff like that. And personally, if it was me, I'd get the hell with the police department and stuff like that, because there was a sister that actually said it at Black Lives Matter, and that's true. It really is. The police department started, you know, as basically a slave patrol. That's how it really started and stuff like that. So one of those things, you know. So, hi, DD. Hi, Jake. Hi, Claire.
What up, Manny?
Manny, thanks for the update.
Hey, Manny.
These deported veterans, it's a story that just doesn't get enough attention, and we're still working on our little documentary on it, but it was great going down there and visiting these guys, and it's good to see them in good spirits despite the horrible situation that they're dealing with. And just to reiterate, I mean, these are guys that joined into the U.S. military and were promised citizenship for their service, and they fought in various wars from Vietnam to Afghanistan to Iraq. And were kind of screwed out of the promises that they were given, and were deported after they ran into some issues with the law, whether it be through the drug war, DUIs, or, you know, minor offenses, some more serious offenses as well, obviously. But that's regardless of the fact that they were, you know, told one thing and then a whole other thing happened. And it kind of goes with the theme of how the United States government treats veterans. They just treat veterans like shit. You know, even the ones that are regular U.S. citizens are treated like shit, and the guys that are from other countries that join up to try to become Americans, they get treated even worse like shit. And then over to the issue of law enforcement, this is something I want to touch on here, because the law enforcement in the United States is just completely out of control. I've been seeing the videos coming out of Baton Rouge. I mean, these guys look like an occupying army. It doesn't even look like police. It doesn't look like law enforcement officers. It definitely doesn't look like peace officers. I mean, these are military troops that are, you know, been created out of police departments, and they come ready for battle. I mean, these guys look like they're ready for World War III. I mean, they're more armored than the guys that are in Afghanistan fighting with the Taliban right now. I mean, literally, they're more armored than that. I mean, it's crazy. Claire has an article that we posted yesterday regarding the robot that they used to bomb the suspect down there in Dallas. And you know, before we talk about that, I mean, this, as Manny was mentioning, this memorial for the Dallas officers, the four guys were shot. They brought presidents in to go to this memorial, and George Bush was there, and he gave a speech, and then he was dancing. I don't know if you guys saw, I mean, I don't know what he was doing, but he was dancing around, holding Michelle Obama's hand. He looked joyous. I mean, he looked like he was out there celebrating. I'm not even playing. I'm sure everybody's seen the video by now. I mean,
dude, it was just pure MK Ultra mind fuck.
That was crazy, man. I don't know what the hell happened there. I don't know if he forgot that he took his meds and took them again. I don't know if he was drunk. I don't know. It was crazy. It was just nuts. It was insane. That being said, on Dallas, like I said, last show we had a great show on Dallas. But some new revelations came to light yesterday, and Claire covered it, regarding their decision to blow up the suspect, Micah Johnson, I believe his name was. Those that aren't aware, they attached a bomb to one of these SWAT robots that they used to go in and, like, safely remove explosives and stuff like that. They used it in reverse. They attached a C4 block onto this thing and drove it up to the guy and blew him up. Claire, you've got an article on this, but what may be even more concerning is not just the fact that he's a robot, but kind of the details that went into the decision-making. What can you tell us about this?
Well, this is crazy to me. First of all, you know, there's an enormous controversy over the idea of blowing up a U.S. citizen without any semblance of due process whatsoever. I mean, so that aside, the decision, and this was a very casual offhand comment that the Dallas police chief made. He said basically it was an impromptu decision, or it was improvised in, you know, 15 or 20 minutes before they blew up the suspect. To think that a life, no matter what he is doing or anything else, can be just kind of, I don't know, dismissed in a decision in 15 to 20 minutes, and the decision is something as monumentally precedent-setting as using plastic explosives to blow up a citizen. I mean, it's just... the repercussions from this are going to be very long-term, and I think that we have yet to figure out exactly what's going to happen, but a number of departments across the country have these robotic tactical units, I believe they call them. So now that this has been done once, if another situation like this happens to rise again, I'm sure that we can expect it to happen again. It's mind-blowing to think that we have completely done away with due process whatsoever just because of the situation at hand. I mean, if the robot could deliver C4 and blow this guy up, couldn't he have easily, you know, used some sort of less lethal force, like tear gas or something? I mean,
yeah,
I just don't... It's crazy.
Why didn't they put a tear gas canister on this robot and drive it up there and set it off on the guy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, it shows a sign of cowardice. Second of all, you know, callousness. And third of all, it's just rash decision-making. I mean, 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. That's crazy. And, you know, conspiracy theorists have been talking about drones for a long time. And, you know, everybody knows that we've got this huge drone war going on overseas. I mean, I don't know what percentage of the bombs we drop are from drones, but last year we dropped 25,000 bombs in the Middle East. I'm sure a good chunk of that was done with drone. And a lot of people, a lot of collateral damage, quote-unquote collateral damage through drone, because they're not nearly as accurate as they like to think they are. And everybody's been saying, well, yeah, they're going to bring these drones home and they're going to start arming them and using them. And you know, the skeptics are like, oh, come on, you're just take off the tinfoil hat. You're crazy. That's never going to happen. And then I think it was... late last year when one of the Dakotas went and passed a bill that said they could start arming their drone, the police drones, with less than lethal technology like tasers and pepper spray and things like that, right? And then I recently saw a drone that was outfitted with, that was able to shoot pepper spray balls for like crowd control and stuff like that. And now Dallas has set the precedent for killing people, U.S. citizens, without trial, with a robot or a drone.
It's coming. It's here. This is the sign. This is the turning point. Now that this has happened and the decision was made so casually, there is no way we can possibly turn back now. It's going to happen again.
And Claire, let me ask you this. Have you seen any lawmakers raising a stink about this drone, about this killing with the robot?
No, of course not. Of course not. I mean, this is because consider this. We have an epidemic of police violence in this country, police violence against civilians. And people have been protesting for years about this, and it's gotten to a fever pitch lately. Suddenly, some person goes and murders five cops in cold blood, which is, of course, unacceptable. But suddenly, you know, it's like we must protect the law enforcement officers. It's like whatever happened to the civilians and the problem and the epidemic of police violence that kind of triggered this whole mess in the first place. And instead of actually fixing the problem through training or through making police have liability insurance or through any number of other avenues, we're just going to like up the ante and blow up a civilian without due process. And then North Carolina passed a bill where they're no longer going to allow dash cam or body cam footage to be publicized at all unless you go to court to get a court order for it. So it's like more protections for police to be able to basically have bad behavior with impunity. And none of this is fixing the problem at all. It's just compounding the issue.
And then, you know, I remember last year following Ferguson and Baltimore and stuff, I think it actually came down from the Obama administration that they're going to start implementing body cameras on a wide scale. And this has basically done almost nothing to stem the killings, because this year we're on track already to have more killings by police than we did last year. And not only that, they won't even release the body camera footage in many of these cases unless there's some kind of huge public outcry, which normally isn't the case unless there happens to be some witness on the scene that actually captures video, which, you know, I'm guessing for almost most police killings, that just doesn't happen.
But also, this is the thing too. The body cam and dash cam footage has been basically proven not to really be effective at all in terms of holding police accountable for wrongdoing. But what North Carolina has done is now set a precedent and basically an example for other states by not making dash and body cam footage public, by not having it be like a matter of public record. It is up to the police chiefs in the state whether or not to release it, even in cases where a subject might be a victim of police violence. Like, they actually have to go to court to challenge, and it's up to the police chiefs if they're going to give them this evidence that would help them prove a crime by police. So this is like an unprecedented act of like police protectionism that is wholly unjustified, and just, I mean, like I said, it's just compounding the issue and making everything worse, and it's going to like spark ire and outrage again.
Now, I know North Carolina is the first state to really codify this statewide, but I'll tell you what, San Diego already has a policy where we're at here. San Diego already has a policy of not releasing dash cam footage automatically, and it can only be released via lawsuit or investigations, and normally will only happen if there's an enormous amount of public pressure. And again, that's the rare case. Almost never happens. As Manny mentioned, I mean, a lot of this stuff just goes unseen, unheard of, you know, a lot of the violence, because it's against people that just don't have resources or people that, you know, aren't getting any attention, you know. And so the reason why certain shootings set off these big public outcries, most of the time it's because somebody happens to be there catching this stuff on video. And if it weren't for that, no one would ever hear about it, you know. And that's why it's so important for people out there. Everybody's got a smartphone. Almost everybody's got a smartphone. If you see something going down, pull it out and record it. You know, turn off the Pokemon game for 5 minutes and record what's going on, because if you don't, somebody may get killed and, you know, no one's going to find out about it. And that's
not... You'll stumble into a corpse.
Not a good thing. Not a good thing. So, Jake, you're our resident expert on robotics and artificial intelligence and stuff. I want to bring up one little aspect here that we haven't mentioned yet, and that's the fact that in the Middle East, and, you know, there's historical context here to all this stuff that, you know, coming home to roost, all this foreign policy stuff, for instance, with the NSA, with the spying, with the surveillance, with the MRAPs and the militarization of the police. All of this stuff started off as like foreign policy stuff. It's like, oh, we're going to build all these MRAPs for Iraq so that they can go and they won't get blown up by the roadside bombs and the IEDs and, you know, the mines and all that stuff. And then when they got done using the MRAPs in Iraq, what happened to them? They came home and they put them into the police forces. And that's why all the police have all these MRAPs and armored cars and shit. We saw them on display down in Baton Rouge. And now, same thing was said about the drones, and I, like I said, conspiracy theorists and skeptic people who have been really critical of what's been going on have been saying, we got to watch out for these drones. Sooner or later, these drones might come home. Now, the thing that's even scarier about the drone technology that we're using right now overseas, that eventually will probably end up coming home to the United States and being used here on the homeland, is drone bombing by algorithm. And that's actually what's going on. Thanks to Snowden, we found out some of these tactics and WikiLeaks, and a few of the dots were connected. And I've had firsthand source that told me about this stuff going on in Afghanistan. But they're using smart drones in some cases over there, where the machines are making the decision on bombing people in the Middle East. And in some cases, it's not always somebody over there behind the control panel of the drone saying, oh yeah, that's a target. They press the button and it bombs them. That's not always the case. Sometimes the decision is being made by the drone, and it's being done by their algorithm, by their smart algorithms. Jake, what do you make of, you know, the possibility of this stuff being, you know, coming home to create, you know, RoboCop here at home?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll definitely happen. I mean, it's as artificial intelligence gets better, and it will, and as drones become more standard and ubiquitous, and which is going to happen, we're going to see, you know, in the next 10 years, you know, I mean, drones flying around is going to be very, very commonplace within a decade. We're not even going to remember a time where we didn't look up in the sky and just see a ton of drones flying around. Commercial drones, government drones. It's going to be all kinds of drones flying around everywhere. And yeah, they'll have a low level artificial intelligence at first, and then the algorithm will get more advanced, and you know, before long they'll start being used for law enforcement things and you know, more advanced operations. And yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting twist to police brutality, because I'm not sure if they'll be able to write racism into the algorithmic code of artificial intelligence. But yeah, I mean, so the short answer is yes. I definitely think within 15 years we'll see police drones, you know, in this domestic area.
Well, let's look at a little logical flow here, right? Because so I think one of the reasons why the U.S. gets away with a lot of these wars overseas now is because the idea of having troops on the ground, boots on the ground, you know, it's a key word, it's a buzzword. No boots on the ground. I mean, as long as there's no boots on the ground, nobody gives a shit about the wars that Obama starts. You know what right. I'm saying? Like, nobody gives a shit if he's bombing Somalia with drones, which, by the way, is happening right now. In fact, we're bombing a bunch of countries in Africa. I'm sure half the people listening tonight have never even heard of this, because it's impossible to get anyone to care about it. So therefore,
those are precision, though, Nick.
Yeah, they're precision. They only kill males between the ages of 14 and 60 because they're all terrorists, supposedly, according to our guidelines.
Only within a full block radius.
Oh, man. You know, so we got this huge drone war going on in Afghanistan, but nobody gives a shit because they're drones. We don't got boots on the ground in Somalia. We may have like a handful of special ops, a handful of CIA, but there's no technically boots, you know, military boots. There's no occupying army. You know, our army left in Afghanistan is very small. The army, the amount of boots on the ground in Iraq is still relatively pretty small. It's around 10,000 or less. But they got a bunch of drones, so nobody really cares, because if a drone gets shot down, well, it's not a guy. It's nobody's family member getting shot down. It's just a drone. And, you know, the whole thing is that boots on the ground after Bush, it just became unpalatable. It became unpopular. And now, looking over here at the homeland, looking back here and looking inward, we see the cycle of violence coming from the police. The police are killing people. People are getting fed up with it. People are now shooting back at the cops. This has been predicted. Now it's been – the prophecy has been fulfilled in Dallas, and it's going to keep happening. As long as police maintain this policy of brutality and indiscriminate killing and mainly just not being held accountable. I mean, it's one thing to kill somebody. It's another thing to just get away with it. That's what I think really, really pisses people off. It's one thing to kill someone, and it's going to anger people. But when they're not held accountable, like everybody else would be held accountable, that's what really sets people off. The cycle of violence is going to continue against the police. Police are going to be getting shot more and more often. I'm not condoning it by any means, but it's just a fact of life. It's going to happen. It's blowback. It's going to keep happening. So the logical progression here is that instead of changing the policy and saying, you know what, we're going to reform the police, we're not going to let them be violent, we're going to hold them accountable, I don't think that's going to happen. What I think the more logical thing is going to happen is they're going to say, you know what, our poor policemen, they're under attack. We need to send RoboCop into these neighborhoods so that if it is attacked, it's only a robot and it's not a human being.
Yeah, I agree with you, but then you'll have, you know, tens of thousands of cops losing their jobs. So I mean, I guess that's something that will have to be negotiated. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think RoboCop will definitely be real. But yeah, and I mean, that's a good
little drones. I mean, you know, these little quad rotor drones that are flying around, a bunch of people have them. I mean, I've thought about getting one myself for covering protests and doing video projects and stuff like that. You know, these are going to be the new patrol car. You know, they're going to have these quad rotor drones flying around conducting surveillance. You know, they're going to be flying around looking for people committing crimes. And if they spot something happening, then they can just, you know, it'll alert the nearest regular cop and the cop will show up and do, you know, do what he's going to do. But, you know, the drones are quickly, I mean, people are underestimating how quickly this drone issue is going to hit us here in the U.S. So, I mean, it's probably happening in many ways and we just aren't aware of it. Just like the NSA spying, we weren't aware of that. Except for the few, you know, conspiracy theorists were like, they're spying on us, man. I swear they're spying on us. You know, no one believed it until Snowden came out and was like, yeah, dude, you're right. I mean, they're spying on everybody. So, I mean, the drones are already flying. One of them, there was a $17 million drone just crashed off the coast of San Diego. Nobody knew it was flying, but apparently it's been they're being used on the border to, you know, enforce the border and stuff like that.
One of those crash in front of the anti-media headquarters?
Something crashed in front of the headquarters, and Jake was here when it happened. Claire was also here when it happened. I don't know exactly what it was, but it definitely looked like either a piece of a drone or a piece of a military plane or something. But the drones are already flying, and people just don't know about it. So, you know, it's only a matter of time before it's like, oh, yeah, you know what? You know, they're here. They're flying. And now you can start seeing them regularly on your street when these quad rotor police drones are flying up and down your block, surveilling everything, making sure everybody's quote unquote safe. So, you know, this is going to be a big issue. And now with the precedent being set in Dallas where you can kill somebody with a robot and really not have any consequences, because I haven't seen one lawmaker. And, you know, if you think back, you guys remember when Rand Paul had that big filibuster against the drones and stuff? And his big concern was drones being, you know, being used on the homeland. I haven't heard that guy say anything about this situation in Dallas. There's no lawmakers in there that are going to stand up for your rights on this issue. They're going to be able to. This Dallas has set a precedent. It's going to be normalized, and sooner or later, it's going to become a regular thing. People getting blown up by robots, and the government's going to be able to do it. And you know what? It's just like when a cop kills a guy, no one's held accountable. Well, when the cops use a robot to kill a guy, who's going to be held accountable then? What are they going to do? Throw the robot in jail? I don't think so. So, you know, this is honestly, I think this is just another insulating layer of you know, no accountability, man. Like, because not only can you not even hold a cop accountable personally when he shoots a guy, now what are you going to do? Hold the robot operator accountable? I mean, come on. This is going to be ridiculous. I have a caller on the line that's been holding for a while. Sorry, I had to hang up on you for a little bit there, but there was just a little background noise. We have a caller from 737 area code. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio Show. Did you want to join this conversation?
Hi, my name's Ellie. No, I don't really have anything to say. I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you guys are saying. I've got the same thing. It's just really nice to hear other people that, you know, are thinking the same thing.
Well, we're glad that you're listening, and you can stay on the line, and our show's going to be over in about 2 minutes anyway, but we have our show here on theantimedia.org/radio or ucy.tv/TAMR every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Different hosts, but my panel is here Monday and Wednesday, so come back and join us. And you could also catch us on YouTube. If you just search for the Anti-Media Radio, you can listen to all of our old shows, or if you miss a show. Anyway, always nice to have some new callers. So yeah, that's pretty much the end of it. I mean, this is very interesting times, and I do see some bright spots with this Clinton and Trump president, you know, Clinton, Trump as our two mainstream options. There's some bright spots in that. There's a silver lining, which is that people are going to be looking for different alternatives. That's always a good thing. I think this will be the first year in a long time where there's going to be not one but two alternate parties that are going to have a real showing in this election. And maybe the next cycle around, I don't think either one of them will win unless they actually join forces, which is a long shot, but you never know. The following cycle, there could be something big. I mean, maybe coalition governments, more than two parties, maybe. That could be something that could really lead this country into a positive direction. If we end up with a Republican or a Democrat in office, I don't care which one, we're going to be end up having the status quo for another 4 to 8 years, and that's just going to be another just prolonging the agony. No accountability, no change. You know, Obama was the hope and change candidate, and you know he failed on it. You know, so to think that
through the stereo, yo, here we go through the stereo.